Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the See You on the Trail podcast. My name is Hitch. I'm here with Mr. Seth.
Hello.
Seth got a new hairdo.
Yes, I like it. I got got rid of the shaggy long hair that hadn't been cut in over a year. And wanted to do something different. And the lady, my wife got her hair done. And while her color was sitting and all that stuff, mine got cut, and our friend that was doing it, she's like, "What do you want?" I said, "Well, I want to look like Jeremy Renner in Hawkeye," and she's like, "Well, show me some pictures." So I did. She goes, "Okay, I'm into it. I'm tired of doing regular lawyers' haircuts." So, and right after me, right as we were leaving, an Oklahoma City police officer was coming in. I'm like, "Oh, she's got another lawyer haircut to do."
That's funny, man. But what have you been up to, man? We just to give you guys a little bit of history about what we do, we don't talk throughout the month.
We talk, just not about what we're going to talk on the show.
Exactly. So we have numerous things to talk about while we're sitting here at the bar and enjoying it. We tried to have we're still in the workings trying to get Justin Ramsey and Brian Trotter here at the podcast studio, and they just couldn't make it right now. So we're making our own. That's your phone again. Yep. We're making our own podcast, just me and him, and we're going to make it happen. Even with the new phone, that's weird.
Well, and I've seen it happen before with like getting a phone call, but I'm not getting, maybe it's just the data.
And there's no telling, but anyway, so we decided to go ahead and do just a podcast with just me and him again, and we decided on the subject of King of the Hammers. The history of it, because after King of the Hammers just happened, I don't know how many social media guru, Instagram, wonderful freaking people out there, they decided to call it King of Hammers, King of Hammer, the Hammers, whatever you want to call it.
King Hammer.
They were out there on the lake bed, and they had no idea what they were walking into.
Or I think they had an idea what they were walking into, but it's so crazy that the names were that far off.
It's crazy.
Some of it could be because it's just so new to them, but a lot of the people are in the off-roading world of some aspect, and I would think like it's not so niche anymore, this type of racing. Like, it is still specialized, but a lot of people have heard about it, so you had to have heard the name correctly at some point, I would assume, or at least read the name when you did your registration or drove in. You know, you saw the big sign, "Welcome to King of the Hammers" or whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get it. And the funny thing is that I made that post on the Insider Rock Sports Insiders. Yeah. I made that post and I said I was going to be the King of the Hammers historian.
Yeah, because what's his face from
Heavy Metal Concept?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Will, he's still giving me shit about it.
You're the historian now.
Yeah, no shit. But he said, and to be honest, I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to know the history in video format, go look at Heavy Metal Concepts, and they call it King of the Hammers Origins.
Yes.
That's exactly where I get most of my information that we're going to talk about is from him. Now, I told him that he would be mentioned in this for that simple fact. Will is a badass dude, and he's... let's go back to the first time. Well, let's start out and we'll run it through chronologically. 2007 was the first race, correct?
Yes, that was the OG race, right?
There's the OG race, and there was only 12 guys, but they call it OG 13. And from what I understand, the OG 13 was just a misinterpretation. So they ended up calling it the OG 13, which included Hobie Smith. You got Hobie Smith. You've got John Reynolds, JT Taylor, and JT was running the old the old, what do you call it, the blue horse or the...
The Tube Shark car.
Yeah, Tube Shark. That's right.
Yeah, blue whore. I don't know.
And then there were numerous other ones. Well, was Matt Messer in that?
Dave Cole was actually in it, driving it. Jeff Knoll.
Was Jeff a part of it?
I thought they both raced in it because then they were like, hey, we're onto something. And
right.
I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, no. And we're looking at Wikipedia right now, too, as well, to bring information. And it says King of the Hammers was founded by Jeff Knoll and Dave Cole in 2007, who organized it in a bar via outlining it on a napkin, which that's in Origins. Mm-hmm. The video is in Origins. The trial run was conducted by 12 teams, which was nicknamed the OG 13 because the 13th was a misconception. All OG 13 guys, all the 12, are invited back to race KOH every single year.
Yeah, and that's even in the rule book.
Correct.
Yeah. Even to this day, like in order of priority for entries, OG 13 has the top priority.
Any winner of a KOH.
But the OG 13, I think, have priority over those.
Oh, okay.
Like in list of it, it's either previous kings or and then OG 13 or vice versa. Like,
gotcha. Yeah. They're right there in the money. So my first 2008 KOH. What was your first year?
First year I went was with Ape when we all got sick.
So 13 or 14, right?
Yeah, one of those two.
Okay. Well, my first year was 2011.
Okay.
At KOH. So let's go ahead and start. 2008, I do remember because they had basically the pits were the campgrounds, the camping.
Yeah, and what is now known as Hammertown, that dry lake bed means dry lake bed. Mm-hmm. Was just everybody kind of gathered there.
Right. And then they had a one takeoff spot for everybody. And there were people.
It was a drag race.
It was a drag race straight down. One thing, and if you go back, you can look at it. I believe, actually, I talked to Dave, and I asked him who the first media people were.
From what I know, it was Pirate.
Pirate was one of them.
Which,
correct.
For those of you that don't know, Pirate 4x4 at that time was the rock crawling message board.
Correct.
Before like Facebook kind of took over that stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you were ever on Pirate, you know, it could be a hostile place. Like you had to have thick skin if you acted in a way that was seen as a know-it-all, or like if you couldn't back up your statements, if you were just being kind of stupid, unsafe, like you would be legit called out and kind of run out of town.
Well, yeah, and the really cool thing is, let's go back to Pirate. If you want to, you can Google how to be Wenzeled. Did you ever hear about the Wenzeled?
I don't think so.
Wenzeled, yeah. Look up Charlie Wenzel whenever you get a chance on Google. He actually, this is all on Pirate, he ended up Skyping out a guy out of some axles or an engine or something. Ended up getting screwed. And the Pirate 4x4 community went nuts on him.
Okay.
And he literally, I don't even know if he's even around anymore. He ran. He couldn't.
I know there were other instances of stuff like that happening. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading through, and because you have people from all over the world, but you had people like, I mean, before doxing was a big thing. Mm-hmm. If somebody knew your name and that you owed someone money, or if you were a shop and screwed someone out, there were people on there that were from all walks of life, and all kinds of information was popping up.
Well, our friend Ape ended up in that same position. Mm-hmm. And that's how he ended up getting one of his buggies built.
The YJ, right?
The YJ. Yep. And then the YJ ended up getting sold and traded so he could have a race car that he never races. But anyway, that's a totally different story.
So... Yeah. So from what I remember is, so it was so popular on Pirate talking about King of the Hammers coming up.
Okay. And, let's get back to that. Yeah, you're right.
they had a black van, like a Econoline van.
Lance's 4x4 van with a satellite dish on top of it.
Off the top of it. I mean, it looked like a news van. Mm-hmm. And they had that parked right next to the drag strip and doing it all off of, I think, cell phone data.
Yes.
Or satellite internet, something like that.
I'm not sure how they...
Whatever was available at that time.
And by the way, Lance, if Lance wants to come over and talk about how he did it, he's going to hear this podcast. So I would love to have him.
It'd be really cool because it wasn't a big production like it is now. It was like one camera or two cameras maybe, and it was mainly just the start-finish line. Yeah, it was
Camo, Jesse Combs, Tech Tim.
I didn't know that Jesse was there.
Yeah, Jesse was on it. But now, I sent a message to Dave Cole, and I said, who was the first media to cover King of the Hammers from its inception? His answer was Muchado or Much Ado Films.
Okay.
Which he actually, Much Ado Films, they actually had Crawling Is for Babies and a few other, which I have some of their DVDs. Crawl Magazine, the original Crawl Magazine. Pirate 4x4, of course. Tay Lee directed the first H. Hammer King Productions DVD. And then after that was Penned.
Mm-hmm.
Penned. Penned was the next one. And then after that, Will Gentile came in with Heavy Metal Concepts.
Okay.
And so that was the first ones. Now, I did talk to Charlene Bauer from Bauer Motorsports.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of it in 2008.
Yes, she was, yeah.
Then I talked to Valerie Douglas. She was actually the first race ops in 2008 because Dave didn't realize that he needed race ops. And so what happened was is Valerie took over race ops and she took care of that in 2008.
Okay.
And she still comes around all the time. I actually talked to her about it as well. And I said, I asked him about Val and Dave just laughed. And I said, is she not old school? And he just laughed and left it at that. So I'm not really sure. But so that was 2008 and there was what? Probably 50 cars?
That's what Wiki's saying is 50. And I know at that time there were discussions of like how many cars could the race handle, like looking towards the future. And I know over the years the amount of cars they would allow grew, and then they started the LCQ to let people qualify into it and stuff like that.
Yep.
And at one time it had grown up to like 100 was the max they were going to do, and people were like, oh, like I don't think you can ever handle more than that because of trail plugs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's been consistently over 100 lately.
Oh, geez. Lately. Yeah. No joke. Now let's go. That was 2008. You guys want to go on, look up 2008 King of the Hammers and understand what we're talking about, because it was so small back then.
And at that time, I mean, it was a desert race mixed with a rock race, but it was not much desert, and it wasn't really hard desert like would think now.
And to be honest, it was racing to the rock trails and then trying to get to the rock trails and honestly get back as quick as you can. Mm-hmm. Because 2007, the winner won a case of beer.
Yes.
So, and then that was completely legitimately true as how they did it. So 2009 is the next one that comes up. That's when it became somewhat more legitimate. And I believe that is the year. Is that the year that, let's look here. Is that the year that Lauren Healy won? Or was it, no, Shannon? No, 2008.
Jason Shear won that.
Jason Shear and Jason Berger won that in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And when it kind of took legitimacy. Is that an actual word?
yes, I believe so.
So, and then 2010, Lauren came in under LCQ,
Yes.
Which is last chance qualifiers, what that means. Lauren Healy came in with Rodney Woody, which I've got some cool video of Rodney, but in 2010, and he got in an LCQ. Nobody knew who he was, and he freaking won it.
Yeah, he was just a rock crawler from New Mexico.
Yep. Yep. Choke Cherry Canyon is where he hangs out at. And
but
to see what he's done in, what, 13 years?
Yeah. Now he's one of the biggest names out there in this type of racing. Yeah.
He's probably the only one that still needs to sign my GoPro.
Oh,
but
that's a valid point.
Let's not even go with that.
Did you see who the co-driver was for J.R. Reynolds?
Randy Slauson in 2007.
Yep. And now he has one of the best chassis out there for that particular race, arguably.
Yeah.
And I don't think I realized that he was the co-driver of that and then built the car specifically for it. Like, that's really the only race he runs and is a three-time winner?
Yeah, three-time.
Three-time?
Three-time, at least. And the funny thing is I remember, now, we're going into 2011, which would bring me back into my realm,
yep,
is when I started. That was my first year there. And they brought in Shannon Campbell, won it as a single-seat IFS car. So that's when that actually...
That was the first IFS car to win.
Yes, that is the first IFS car to win. And the funny thing was, is they qualified on backdoor in 2011.
Okay.
And then in 2012, they qualified over at Chocolate Thunder.
Before it... And it looked different than it does now.
Yeah, and Will Gentile just posted that picture. Man, it's completely different. There were trees on Chocolate Thunder.
Yes. Where the sand dune were, like the all the spectators are. Yeah, that had bushes and stuff
on it.
That's
crazy. But so 2011 was the first year that I ever went to KOH. And
So that car that he built then, you know, there was a lot of...
Shannon, you're talking about.
Yes, Shannon Campbell. Yeah. There was a lot of discussion about can IFS hold up and all these things. And that was kind of a breaking point of, oh, we can do things a little differently because the desert section started getting longer and longer. And could you rock crawl with IFS? Because the theory had always been IFS were not working the big rocks. And it was, will it make up in the desert what it gives up in the rocks? Well, I mean, was the first time that was kind of, that theory was kind of debunked of, oh, maybe this will work.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the turning point was 2011. Now, see, I started dealing directly with King of the Hammers and doing Ultra 4 racing in October of 2010.
Okay.
So I started really going into that. So 2011 was the first year that I was ever put boots on the ground at King of the Hammers. And the greatest thing, and the funny thing is that he won it that year, but I remember walking specifically down Griffin Radiator Drive, which is the front drive right there. And I remember somebody hollering at me, Alan, hitch, you know. I turn around and it's Shannon Campbell. And I'm like, how do you remember my name? And he's like, well, dude, we hung out at SEMA. We drank beers at SEMA. I'm like, you were drunk at SEMA. And he goes, I still remember shit. I mean, we sat at the round bar at SEMA, at SEMA in the round bar at Hard Rock. And me and Shannon were best buds then. And when we drove away from that, when we took off and came back home, I didn't assume that Shannon would ever remember who my name was or what it was or if it made any difference, but he did. And that would be like the deciding moment in my career that I was like, holy crap, these people are freaking cool.
Yeah. I've had that same thought with him. Nationals last year, I drove up into Disney. First, I didn't exactly know where I needed to go. I was waiting on a call back from someone. And, first trailer I saw was the Campbell trailer, and I saw the door open and some movement. I was like, I'm going to pull in here and just kind of bullshit a little bit. Hopefully they remember me, because I've met them off and on over the years. whether they did or not, they were still very welcoming and stood there and, you know, shot the shit with me for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure he remembers me. At least he, every time I'm like, hey, do you remember this? He nods his head. But whether it's legit, I don't know. But it is cool that you've got these big names, at least in this sport. And yeah, they're very, very they're, welcoming, down to earth.
You are their friend just as everybody else, which I think is freaking hilarious. 2012. Now, Eric Miller and Robert Ruggiero is the co-driver. They were the ones that ended up winning 2012 in a solid axle car.
And kind of as a little bit of an unknown.
Yeah, they, to be honest, they were kind of a, they were kind of unknown at that point.
Well, he started out in the stock class in a Grand Cherokee with an Exo Cage, I believe.
Really? That's something new to me. That's cool.
Now, I could be wrong. I do believe that's where he started. And his family is very educated.
Well, aren't they doctors?
Yeah, like his, all his siblings are doctors and lawyers and stuff. And I think he might have been down that path, like, because, you know, and by no means am I accusing his family or saying this is fact, but I do know in certain, you know, in some people's families, based on how that, you know, your parents are and then your siblings are, like, you're kind of pushed in a certain direction. You know,
right.
Like if, no, you're, if your older brothers played baseball, a lot of times you're expected to play baseball or at least some type of sport, not go into acting or something, you know.
It's,
so he, from what I understand, he broke the mold and was like, no, I want to do this. So he's got this family of highly educated professionals, and he decided to go a different route. And now, in his own right, he is a very highly educated professional, but just in a much different
realm. Yeah. No, I mean, he's got Miller Motorsports cars now.
Yeah, his chassis are...
They're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's literally... What do you got? You got Randy Slauson's cars, which mm-hmm. one of those...
The Bomber Fab.
Bomber Fab.
And...
Jimmy's.
I actually have an RC car, Bomber Fab.
Everybody's got those. Those are so cool.
I
want to play with it. Axel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a $1,500 RC car.
Yeah.
That I was a $400 kit that I've got. The only thing original on it is like the cage structure. Everything else has been replaced. Just like a JK, you know?
Yeah. Just like a Jeep. Just empty every pocket.
But that's it. But,
so you got
Bomber Fab, Miller Motorsports,
Jimmy's.
Jimmy's, which Jimmy's has different generations now and different styles.
They got the Bloodline chassis and a few other things.
Campbell has cars out there, but they're not really like a cookie cutter. Like each car is like built to, they're a little bit more custom.
And then Tribe has some chassis out there, but they're not building chassis anymore. They're
at all.
I'm not sure that I know of.
I'm sure if you went there and wanted one, they'd do it. I know they've gotten more back into trail riding. They've got multiple trail cars out there. You've got Goat Built, which makes kits. There's a couple of those that run out there. Doug Jackson started in a Goat Built.
He got a Goat Built, and then Tribe 16.
They wrecked it, and then like completely
redid it. Yeah.
Over time, it was so from the midsection of the driver's compartment up. And front and back half of the car were completely redone by Tribe. The only thing Goat Built was like the from the like middle of the doors down to the belly.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was that's a funny story. If we can get Doug to just like fly up here and hang out with us.
He could probably land his stall.
Aircraft in my driveway.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or right over by the elementary school, and we'll just go pick him up.
Yeah, we can go pick him up if he wants to come. But to be honest, if he wants to, he probably will not promote Ultra 4.
We don't have to. He doesn't have to. I just because at one time, every time he was at a race, which for a couple of years he was at every race.
Oh yeah, he was.
And Miles would always say, the oldest driver in Ultra 4 or something along those lines.
It was either him or Bill Baird. And Bill's out now, of course. Yeah. And did you notice that Bill's car, original car, is up for sale right now?
Is it the original or is it the one that was unfinished that someone bought?
No, it was completely built and done. And it basically he kind of cookie cuttered the Campbell chassis.
Because he had a Campbell car.
He had a Campbell car, and then he took that and made his own and made it narrower.
I think
and
his
else.
First Campbell car might have been the one that, I think it was the one Shannon won with the first time with an IFS. There's,
you're probably correct on that. You
I believe so.
But
because
but yeah,
it had the 8-to-1 header on it.
Yeah, well, the 8-to-1, that's how you always know it's the 8-to-1 header. That's how you always knew that a Campbell was coming around the corner.
Well, now it's a little different.
Is it?
Yeah, they run a X pipe with so it's two headers to an X pipe right before it exits out the side of the car.
But it still sounds the same.
Sounds similar.
Similar.
Yeah. All
right. Well, I haven't hung out with those guys in a long time, but I know that Bill Baird's car, it's narrower and it's a little bit different and it's for sale now. Okay. And it's for sale. I want to say like 150. I think is where it's sitting.
Well, that car was competitive at the time. It won your race first year.
It won the first day.
That's true.
And then it bailed on it. It ended up
didn't he
casing
roll
on the second.
Yeah,
no,
he hurt himself
he
on
blew
that.
He blew the shock out on the right hand side.
I thought that's when he hurt
on
his
the
back
second
or
day.
Something.
No,
was
no,
that a different
no, that
race?
One. Yeah, that was a different race.
But I took a picture after he finished there at Buzzard Canyon of his GPS with a max speed of,
yes,
what was it, 110,
120? Yeah, it was somewhere in there.
And I was asking you, which is like the first time we had ever really done anything together, how fast you think someone will go? And you're like, I don't think anybody will break 90 or even get close to 100.
I mean, he had like 115.
Because there was only one spot. It was a back stretch along a fence line, and it was rutted out, kind of washed out a little bit. And I said, hey, Alan, look at this. And your eyes got big.
Yep. No, that was, man. Well, we're getting there to that. So let's keep on going.
Well, hold on. We were talking about Doug Jackson.
Yeah.
I bet you the record of being the oldest rookie driver of the year, because he is. I bet you that record will stand for a while because he was not a young pup when he got into it. And he got the award for rookie of the year.
Yeah, he did. He did get Rookie of the Year, and that, with the exception being the only thing, is Bill. Bill was 64.
But he didn't get a Rookie of the Year award.
Correct.
So that record of being the oldest Rookie of the Year, that's something to always stand by, you know?
And Doug's an awesome dude, man. You know, believe it or not, just outside of racing, I called him and I said, hey, man, my son wants to go flying. Can we go down? Can we fly? Can you take us up in your bush plane? He's like, just show the hell up. We show up to his house. The greatest thing. This is the funniest thing in the world. We show up to his house. His airstrip is in his backyard.
Okay.
So,
well, you need like 5 feet of airstrip for those planes.
Well, I know, but no. He has a Cessna.
Oh. Okay.
That is also it's like a commercial plane. So he has a Cessna there. Well,
he had plus, that before he got into this other stuff.
Correct. So we show up and he's like, hey, man, come out and see my pets. We go out and see his pets. He has a fucking pet skunk.
Yeah, they have raccoons and skunks. And,
yeah. So we go see the skunk. We go have a good time with the skunk. And then he's like, you guys want to go ride? And we're like, yeah. Oh,
shit, you just punch yourself in the mouth with the microphone.
I just hit myself in the head.
I think your girlfriend wished that into existence.
There's a good chance she's sitting over there. But so anyway, so then we get on we jump in the side-by-side. We drive like a 500 feet to his hangar. And he has the Badlands Traveler, which is his stoll plane.
Okay.
And then we have the Cessna. And we're sitting there and he's like, man, the wind's a little bit iffy. So we're not going to take the stoll plane up.
Which, for those of you who don't know, stoll, STOL, stands for short takeoff landing.
Yep.
Or what, if you saw a plane flying around in Alaska, a bush plane, mm-hmm, that's what those are.
So he says the stoll plane, I don't want to take it up right now, so let's just take the Cessna up. And so we jump in the Cessna. My boy is in the passenger seat, and we went up, and my boy got to fly the plane.
That's cool.
Everything. It was so freaking cool.
But he still doesn't have a driver's license.
Yeah, he's still, man, the second freaking time he's failed a freaking drive. But he's flown a plane. It makes no sense. But anyway, so we went and did that, and then we went we all went out to eat and had a good time. And but it was really cool that Doug did that. And Doug's one, for all you newbies, people that have just got into it in the past 2 or 3 years, you probably don't know who Doug Jackson is. And Doug Jackson is one of the nicest guys that put 100% into his racing effort. And he did well.
Yes, he did.
He did pretty well.
I stayed in his trailer the last time I was at the Hammers. I knew that they were, them and Tribe were putting a big crew together to go out there. And I messaged him about a month before. Hey, do y'all need any help? He said, yeah. Can you get down there on these dates? And I said, yeah, I'll just, you know, need a way out there. And a couple of days later, I got information to get linked up with Chris Summers, which I'd met before. Right. And me, Chris Summers, and the kid from Indiana that worked, he was a welder.
Indiana.
He lived in Texas. Originally, he was from Indiana or that area. He still lives in Texas, builds like custom welding tables and stuff.
Oh, that's...
I can't think of his name.
He's a little bit younger than me. If I called Chris Summers, I would know it. He worked for Barco.
Yeah, worked for Barco for a while. He was built. He built
David. We called him. We called him Super Dave.
Yes.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He was the third person in the truck driving out there, and I stayed in Doug Jackson's trailer with another guy. But kind of find out, Summers never stayed in his trailer that had living quarters the whole time. So I could have had my own bed, my own little area. It was the night after the race. Everybody, you know, is getting ready to leave as early as possible to try to beat traffic or get into traffic as close to the front as possible. And I went ahead and slept in Summer's trailer. And I said, where are y'all sleeping? He goes, oh, we've been sleeping in one of the toter homes the whole time. I was like, are you serious? I could have had my own private spot this whole time. Instead of sleeping on an air mattress in the front of Doug's stacker, which had heat and stuff, but right. To pee, I had to go out. Like, wasn't a bathroom.
You just walk outside. Yeah. And go, yeah.
So I was like, man, okay, thanks. But, and then, you know, rode back with Chris. But yeah, I pitted for Doug in the Tribe cars, and I even got peed on by Matt and Adam in the modified car, crawled under the car at the main pit. The exhaust was loose. It had broke a weld. So I'm undoing a V-band clamp to get the exhaust out. And I'm on the tarp because you got to have fluid containment. Mm-hmm. And it contained that fluid. And because, you know, you're not going to pee when you're like in motion, when you're focused.
Yeah.
So they came in, they stopped. I'm under the car and I feel something hit my shoulder and I see this liquid. And I'm like, what is that? And I look up. There's no other leaks, but it's coming right from under the driver's and passenger seat. So I'm getting this bolt off, and I'm kind of shimmying away. I get it off, and I get out, and I've got this wet spot on my shoulder. And I'm like, well, hopefully they finish, and I believe they won again. I was like, well, I took one for the team on that one. I don't think anybody even realizes it because I was a little embarrassed to say I got peed on.
Well, the really funny thing about that is when we were at we're still at 2012.
Yeah. We're on a tangent.
In 2012, I went and did Vegas to Reno with Derek West with 4420. And the funny thing was that we were just running pit. We'd run pit while they were racing. And I'll never forget this. They got me, but they'd pull in on the tarp and they're like, oh dude, there's water there. Go check and see what it is. Well, your first, your immediate thought is to put your hand in it and taste
smell it.
Taste it or smell it. Yeah. And no, it's them freaking pissing. And then I also, the other thing was, it was late in the day. We were racing from Vegas to Reno. And what's his name? He actually paid to run some of it. God dang it. I can't remember his name now. I won't say it's Wyatt, but it's not Wyatt. But anyway, the guy that runs all the crew chief, which is Travis Brake. Travis Brake, he goes to try to reset everybody's freaking seatbelts. And he's like, why is the seatbelt wet? And the dude's like, I'm sorry, dude. I couldn't hold it anymore.
And he didn't have a catheter.
He didn't have a catheter. And it was, he's a dude, he's from Alabama. He's raced a couple races like at Copper Mines with us and stuff. I can't remember his name. It's not Wyatt. I can't remember his damn name. But anyway, but it was so funny because he grabbed hold of a wet, soaking wet 5-point harness. And he's like, ah. So anyway. All right, next up, let's go ahead and go 13. To 13. Randy Slosson gets it again.
No, that's his first win.
Oh, you're right.
So the first year, which was unofficial, he was a co-driver.
He was a co-driver with J.R. Reynolds.
And then but multiple times he was in the running to win it. And I believe he podiumed a couple times, but that was the first year he finally won it with his brother as the co-driver, which I still think is his co-driver to this day.
Yeah, and that's very true. And Michael, to be honest, me and Randy, we talk here and there, mm-hmm. but Michael's one of the ones that's more friendly and more nice. And he gets
Randy's
along.
A little reserved. Maybe it might be a stretch to call him a little shy.
Yeah.
But I have talked to him. He, once again, very friendly, you know, but he kind of stays within his shell a little bit.
Yeah, no, and that, I believe, that is the same year that he actually came into pit while Shannon Campbell.
The whole roosting incident?
Yes. Yeah.
Was it there or was it for? Was it after? I don't know. But yeah, there was a year that
I can't remember
was
when.
Issue.
I want to say it was that one because it wasn't a big deal until they realized that he won. But he came in and he roosted Shannon Campbell while he was underneath the car changing a transmission. And that was the first and one and only, that I know of, red card that's ever been filed at King of the Hammers.
Okay.
So that was...
I remember Randy it being an issue and being... I think there was video. And the issue is not so much that it happened, but that it was allowed to happen, or that it happened at all, because...
In the pit. The pit was the problem.
Speed limit in the mm-hmm. hot in the pits.
Yeah, it was a hot pit speed limit is the problem. And he came in and he spun around just trying to do something. But that was the big one out of that. Let's go. You know what the funny thing is you go back to I believe it was 2009 or 2010. No, it had to have been 2009. No, it had been 2010 where Shannon lost a transmission.
He had a long history over many years of going through transmissions.
He blew a transmission. He got somebody from outside help.
Towed back to main camp.
He got back in the car, started racing again.
He was, you know, officially retired from the race. He was disqualified, but yeah, got back on course and still would have podiumed, I think.
That would have been 10, right? 2010, I believe, is when it was 9 or 10. So
I'm not sure. But I do remember that happening.
He ran over one dude in Sledge.
That was Casey Curry, I think. Casey, which was a Campbell car.
No, it was Matt Carter.
Oh, okay.
It was Carter. I remember the name Carter for the simple fact that ran over him and screwed him up.
That's a big deal in one of the DVDs. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because it broke a shock and some other stuff.
Broke a shock, and he still ended up in the top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I understand that you were doing stuff illegally as far as court, but dude's making, he's still top 10. Mm-hmm. That's pretty badass.
Well, and for those of you that don't know, if you're in these trails and you block the trail, you should assume that now you are a part of that trail.
You are. Yep.
Now, there are some gentlemanly things to do, and sometimes it might be better to wait and get permission. But in reality, you don't have to, because it's a full contact sport, mm-hmm. essentially.
It is.
And there was some stuff that happened this year that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But that stuff happens, and people get upset. But in my eyes, you got to expect it. Now, afterwards, maybe go, if you do that, go up, say, hey, I apologize. Can I help you fix it or something?
Exactly. But
if you're stuck to a point where your car can't move and you are the way through the course, you're now...
You're an obstacle.
You're now the course.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point of view.
Now, okay, so 2011, I went and I was not an... I didn't do anything. 2012 was when Eric Miller and Robert Garrio won, and I was actually an announcer there. That was the first year that I was an announcer. 2012, it was awesome because I got to... I mean, I got to interview some of the big names in the sport. I loved it.
It's too bad you lost that job.
Yeah, I know. I probably, you know, the funny thing is, if I would have hung on for another year, it changed from Hammer King, from King of the Hammers to Hammer King Productions.
Yeah, you just, you open your mouth one too many times.
Yeah, that happens. That's what you do as an announcer. Is you open your mouth. But anyway, so 2013, Randy Slauson won it with Michael, with his brother. And then 2014, Lauren came back and won again with Casey Torello.
I don't know who Casey is.
Casey's a badass. Casey
but
has,
I do know that car that he won with, it had the rolled tubing back, didn't it? Which that car ended up going to a guy that raced, ended up racing Dirt Riot and your races.
Correct. Now that was a tri-built car.
No, that was not. That was a Jimmy's car. It had the Chevy
front
clip.
You're right.
It was red, and I forget the guy's name. He's an older guy. I think he ended up painting it black, maybe. But I remember being at, granted, I've got to stop saying because my wife said I say too much.
No, okay. No, I know exactly who you're talking about. The 2014 car was sold to the Nathan Unruh. And you say, that's even funnier. Yeah. Nathan Unruh bought it.
But that's not the guy I'm talking about that ended up racing it at your races, though. He was an older guy, like scraggly beard. I forget where he's from.
I don't know.
I remember... At Dirt Ride, the last Dirt Ride at Copper Mines, because I was there with Ape, he rolled at the finish line and almost hit...
Daryl Gray.
Yes, Daryl Gray.
Okay, Daryl Gray is who had... Okay, here, I got the story for you. Lauren Healy sold that car that he won in 2014. Mm-hmm. He sold that car to Nathan Unruh.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know who that guy is. He raced it for a year... Nathan Unruh's dad said, "You're not making any money with this car. I'm selling it."
Oh.
So he sold it back to Lauren Healy. Lauren Healy backtaffed it, made it straight, made it a straight deal.
Okay.
Which turned out to be the red one, the red one that you're thinking about. And then he sold it again to Daryl Gray.
Okay.
Which Alex Inman is the co-driver for that car.
Okay.
So that's exactly what the story is on that whole story. And the funny thing is, Lauren's going to be pissed at me for saying this. Lauren made about $70,000 selling that car three times.
Hey, you can't blame him.
No. And he did it right. He's like, he bought that car back from Nathan. He sold it to Nathan Unruh for $70,000. He bought it back for $35,000 and then turned around and sold it to Daryl Gray for another $70,000.
Okay.
Which is perfectly fucking awesome.
If you're able to make money on a deal and do it honestly, because that car is not a $35,000 car by any means. But if you're able to get somebody out of a pinch in a bind, and I don't think that's taking advantage of them because... I mean, there's two parties to it. I doubt there was a gun to someone's head on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no, and that's the funny story about that. And I mean, and me and Lauren have talked about a lot of things back when he was just sponsored by Jimmy's. Mm-hmm. He used to be just sponsored by Jimmy's. And Jimmy's would do a lot of stuff for him as far as a sponsorship. But, and I'm gonna go to my grave talking about what Lauren had told me about what Randy and Jimmy's would do for him. But yeah, no, that car right there, that was so funny because he won KOH in it, sold it to Nathan Unruh, got it back, bought it back, and then sold it to Daryl Gray.
Yeah.
And made $70,000. Huh? That's so freaking awesome. But.
And you still won't sign your GoPro.
No, he still won't sign. He won't sign my GoPro.
When you start a drinking game, like every time I say, every time we talk about the GoPro, every time you talk about something you've talked about in another podcast.
Oh, like 18 times?
Yeah.
We're gonna be drunk, dude.
No, I'm talking about for everybody else. That, like in the comment section, we're going to put rules for the drinking game.
That might be fun. We could probably do it.
Every time we mention Territory Whiskey.
That's another thing. Yeah. Hey, Michelle, can you find us some shot glasses?
Or every time you mention eating at Land Run, which I think is the only place that you eat at, it seems like.
Probably, yeah. We've been there three times these last 3 days, man. It's freaking crazy.
Which, when we had our last guest here with the kids, and you were like, man, I'd love to go to Land Run, but it's not very kid-friendly. So we went to Heyday because they had the arcade, and I ended up playing... Oh,
laser tag.
Should have had video of that, of me playing laser tag with the kids.
We should have put the...
Because it's me, my 10-year-old daughter... And the two boys running around playing laser tag, and the smallest boy, the vest was like at his knees, and he's out there. I don't even know if he knew how to like reload or actually like shoot. He's running around just pulling the trigger at everybody, and he probably never got to shoot because he was always getting shot, but somehow still ended up with a higher score than me.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we have fun when we come do these podcasts, and one thing I say. In my posts and on social media and stuff, we don't do Zoom calls. The reason why we don't do Zoom calls is because we want the interaction and the fun stuff going on here. So that's why we do it here in the studio and have fun with it.
And I've got kids. He's got an older kid.
Yep.
I mean, I almost brought my dog back again today. I was in a rush and didn't bring Archer.
I figured you'd bring Abby or somebody.
Well, Abby's at her dad's, and I asked Anna if she wanted to come, but we had a long day at the ballpark yesterday. So.
Gotcha. So,
but yeah, we're very family oriented, and if you've got time, we'll go somewhere after and have a drink or go play laser tag with the kids.
Right.
Like, I'll play laser tag with the kids while everybody else gets a beer. I'm not opposed to it, you know?
We have a good time. And the really cool thing is, like, I mean...
We got deer summer sausage here.
Yes. Yeah, our neighbors hook us up with some good deer sausage. She's going to cook some backstrap.
Is it the neighbor that I just ran over their mailbox?
No, it was the one next door, not across the street, so we're good.
Don't tell Anna that.
Yeah, I won't tell anybody
I'll buff
that.
Out the mark.
Is it still recording?
Can you hear me smacking?
No, she can't hear shit.
Talking to you. That good stuff.
Okay, so we're on 2013.
We're on 15.
15?
We just talked about 2014.
Yeah, we did. Okay, 2015. Huh?
That's your job.
I mean, you had really? Look at it and make sure it's still recording. Well, look at it and make sure it's still recording.
Well, did the battery die?
No, it's plugged in. It shouldn't.
Or was it the screen just went blank?
It says, is there a red dot?
Memory card full?
No, fuck.
All right, time out. We got technical difficulties.
Oh, shit. Let me go ahead and...
Figure out where we stopped at.
I'm not worried about it because now. So we're back. All right, guys, we took a bathroom break and we're back. So one thing we like to do is talk about who takes care of us, who lets us do this. 100%, to be honest, it's in my shop, it's in my studio, so See You on the Trail is the biggest sponsor.
Yep.
But we are trying hard to get a couple more sponsors, and this guy right here, Territory Whiskey, they're based out of, well, they bottle in Orlando, Florida. No, Hollywood, Florida is where they bottle out of, but they're based out of Paul's Valley, Oklahoma, which is just a few miles south of us.
Oh, I didn't realize they were based out of Paul's Valley. I knew that they bottled it in Hollywood, Florida. I didn't know they were based out of Paul's Valley. Okay.
Yeah, they're based out of Paul's Valley, and this is kind of why we kind of attached to them and started talking to them, and we're in the process of trying to get these guys to be able to help us with the podcast. So, I mean, we take a shot every single podcast. So
here we go.
It's good stuff right here.
Mm.
It's a pecan whiskey.
Your pecan whiskey.
And that's what you always say.
Well, you still haven't put it on a button either.
No, and I had it on a button.
Oh, you
and
did?
And then this, actually? I actually had it set up on a button. Let's see if it.
Your pecan cinnamon. Oh, there we go.
It worked. I didn't think that actually saved, but it did. What's the other ones that I saved?
You know, your co-driver gets out of the car and he's winching and all these things that come up. You got to be calm enough to remember it's just a fun race. It's not worth putting somebody in harm's way. And I feel that way about the crew guys and the pits, the people that you see on the race course.
That's some of the stuff that I saved from the...
Origins?
It's not Origins. It's the... Race of Kings for the rookie class.
Okay.
So the rookie class is what I did. And there's,
which I think that's a great program that they've put together.
Oh, gee, many Christmas. It's,
I've seen a lot of drivers say, I wish we had that when I first started.
Yeah. No, and then a lot of them. And the great thing is that Brent Moffitt, I've been talking to him past few days. He has to get some shocks taken care of. And a few other things. Once he gets everything taken care of and he has a drivable rig, he's coming to our podcast.
Where's he out of?
I'm going to say Idaho, but I know that's not right. He's on the east side of Oklahoma.
Okay.
So he's not too far from us.
If it's Idaho,
say Idaho, but I don't
know. If it's
Idaho,
we got to do an intro of Idaho Blues.
No, and I can hold on just a second. We can find it real quick. Facebook. Let's look it up here. Brent Moffitt is out of, ladies and gentlemen,
United States of America,
Keota, Oklahoma.
Okay, I do not know where Keota is,
and it's on the east side. I'm sure he cut his teeth in like Clayton,
okay,
and all that kind of stuff. So, but he has a Jimmy's chassis that he was part of the
looks like Mickey Thompson tires.
I think so.
Mickey Thompson's been getting in the game with their new tires. They're with
Mickey Thompson tires. Yes, sir.
Cade Rod is on Mickey Thompson tires now. The Pellegrinos, I think, are on Mickey Thompson's now.
You are correct. And then he's not Dave Cole, but that's Dave T. Hundy. But,
okay, I remember that car. I didn't know. Nice.
Have you met that guy yet?
No.
Dave Hundy? Never met Dave Hundy?
I've been to the Hammers twice. It's been a handful of years since I've been there. So no.
Mm.
Every time I say take a shot.
Do you know, well, you remember the go-kart racing that we did for Nationals last year, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I didn't make it.
He was one of the sponsors.
For what company?
HDSQ.
SDHQ. SDHQ. Oh, okay. I have met him.
That's
then.
Dave Hundy.
Oh, right okay. There. I think I have met him before.
So, but no, Brent Moffitt is coming on the podcast.
Okay, nice.
He said he'll be here. He just has to get a couple things done to where he can bring his car here.
Okay.
So he'll be here, and he was part of the rookie class, which the rookie class, as far as I'm concerned, is badass.
Yes, I agree. So, because back to, we've been talking about KOH this whole episode, it is so different than going to any other race because it's so much bigger in terms of prep, your logistics, because it's very remote. You have to have a lot of people there and a lot of moving parts to get there and while you're there.
Yeah.
You've got qualifying that is days before your event. You've got so much pre-running to do learning to do, if you're not local to that area, you probably only go there once a year, or maybe Thanksgiving time frame before King of the Hammers, to pre-run, kind of reform yourself to what's going on. And just like anywhere, you're in the mountains, in the desert, there's wind, there's weather, things move, things change. Like we mentioned Chocolate Thunder, how over the years the sand has moved, rocks move,
it's unreal.
All that stuff. So you go out there and you're in this city that is built one time a year, and even me being there, the two times I've been there as pit support, pit crew, a tag along, whatever term you want to use, it is overwhelming, because you get there and it's, all right, we got to go to Tech. Where's Tech? Oh, it's on the other side of Hammertown. What side? Like, you lose track of north, south, east, mm-hmm. west. You're surrounded by toter homes, motor homes, generators, vendors. Even when you get out of the fence for Hammertown, you're surrounded by campers, and someone might say, hey, we're over here by this. Where's that? Like, it's huge. So the way they've done it, by bringing these guys in, introducing them to people that are doing this and have won this and have so much knowledge for it, on how to prep your car, build your car, get sponsors, pre-running, giving them that experience, that knowledge before you even get there, I think is invaluable.
No, it's crazy. You know, just bring this back to, was it 2 years ago? I called Dave and I said, Dave, I want to do a video about how hard it was to put on KOH during COVID. And he said, get your ass here. And I said, yes, sir. So I took off and I went to KOH. No, I went to the Hammers. It's not KOH. It's called the Hammers then.
Yes.
And I went to the Hammers and I went to his house, and he's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I want to do a video. I want to do a video about how hard it was to put on KOH. He goes, but what do you want to do while you're at Hammers? And I was like, I don't know. He goes, well, do you want to go wheeling? And I went, well, yeah, but I don't have a freaking car. And he's like, I've got a car. Get in the driver's seat. Let's go.
Was it in the Legend car?
It was in the KOH spec car.
That's now electric.
The spec car. That's now electric. And he goes, let's go. And he goes, and the funny thing was, is that we got up there, and now I was sitting, 90-degree angle is the way I feel it. 90-degree angle. And he's like,
it's probably like 10 degrees.
Yeah. And he goes, I thought you've wheeled. And I was like, not with hydraulic steering.
Oh,
nothing.
Because your experience of wheeling is like Disney with a YJ with no power assist.
Exactly.
And 35s.
And he's like, yeah, fucking listen to me, dude. And he got me up, and we just did a ledge just outside of the compound.
Yeah.
And we had a fucking ball. I loved it.
Well, I've seen videos
and he was such a great dude when that went down.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody says he's an asshole. And to be honest,
I've seen both sides of it, I think.
And dude, he can be an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, he's a good dude, man.
I mean,
I got nothing. I got nothing on him.
He has kind of ripped into me a little bit on radio when I at Nationals at Crossbar 1 year. But like 30 minutes later, I made him laugh on the radio talking about somebody was walking across the hot pits that shouldn't have been, but they were carrying something or doing something. And the way I said it, granted, probably from my military background, was probably a little off color, maybe, you know. And he was like, I can't believe you just said that, you know, on the radio. But people have their quirks. You learn to live with it or you don't.
Well,
you know, I don't have any dog in that fight.
Well, here's the question. Did you watch?
Of course I did. Yeah. I watched it from
the driver's meeting.
I watched it from beginning to end.
And what were your thoughts on it?
So I think the questions were legit. How they were worded may have been worded a little differently, but none of this is scripted. You don't walk into a driver's meeting with a list of questions. And when a driver is asking you stuff and you give them an answer and then they ask a rebuttal question and it's not how you want it asked, maybe ask for, you know, hey, can we talk about this after? Can we, you know, so we can get some clarification. But I think there were legitimate concerns or worries, and I think those need to be addressed. There are things in place to help prevent what Vaughn was talking about, the VCPs, and that's a very good thing. But I also think that skirting the rocks in the toughest race in the world, how do I put this? It's chicken shit.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you on that.
I'd even commented on Instagram on a certain someone's post about a certain someone with a similar last name on the live feed while Dave was commentating, I believe, or right before he started commentating, skirting rocks in the sand on the side. So it's not isolated to a couple people. Everybody's doing it. And as a racer, I would be doing the same thing, because your honesty is not going to win you a race. If everybody's doing it, it's free game. I get that. But can we rope it off? Can we have marshals there? I don't know. There are multiple ways to do it. Some are more expensive than others. Some take more infrastructure than others. But I think in the end, if there's a rock section and you're going around it, you're afraid. You're more worried about getting to the finish line than actually racing the toughest race in the world and finishing that. You're making it too easy for yourself. And that is not on the race director, because they made a tough course. You are making it easier. And skirting rocks and obstacles where you can, which is not illegal, but when it's caught on tape, you are not making yourself look good.
No, you're completely, I would say you're completely right on that. Because the simple fact is, my thought on it, whenever I watched the driver's meeting, they were looking for a way to skirt, to...
Well, I think Vaughn was putting it out there broadly because there are so many spots it can happen at.
Correct. You know, and then that he was making sure that if I can do it, I will do it. But if I can't, then let me know.
I think he was, in my eyes, I think he was wording it in a way so he wasn't picking anybody out, mm-hmm. even himself. Sorry, I had to burp. And
that was weird. Phone. That wasn't you. Don't worry about it.
I turned the data back off. Probably getting a text message from my wife. Where you at? You said you'd be home at 5. But like, there are some questions that are hard to nail down to a specific area when half the race is in the rocks. Like, no, I can't narrow it down to one obstacle unless you want me to narrow down every specific obstacle, which is going to take forever. How are we limiting?
That's where Dave's at. Is he's like, Do you really want me to nail it down to every single fucking obstacle?
Yes. I do.
Think so? All right.
No, because if you don't, the people that are legitimately taking it because they don't know any better, maybe they're new. And then you've got the guys that are running top 10 and finishing because they're skirting the rocks. It makes, and by no means am I picking anybody out, because I don't know who exactly did and didn't.
Right.
And if you did in one spot, but you didn't everywhere else, you're not the same as the guy who did it everywhere they can. But if you go there and you're legitimately hitting every rock trail, rock section, you're not going to be as fast as the guy that's skirting everything he can.
But then, let's go on to this. And we're talking way after we were supposed to be doing it by year, but well, we're not.
We can go back this year, if we want.
But this year, Jason Shearer got caught short coursing on video.
Now,
but did the funny thing is,
but was it
Dave? Dave was on live feed
when that happened.
Because he was
close to the finish,
mm-hmm.
And I get what they so. If they were within 150 feet of center line of the course,
so that's 300 feet. You got
wide,
100 yards.
Yes, width wise, but from the center of the course, which the path they were on, I don't know if it was directly on center, well, but that is the path everybody was taking. So the route that they then took, which was not the race course, the traditional race course, if it was within that boundary, that is legal.
And then on top of that, he was passing lap traffic as well.
Okay.
He was passing lap traffic is all he was trying to do, which still...
That is all that they said they were trying to do, which I'm going to take him for their word. From all I know, he's an honorable guy.